You're listening to the Racking Focus Podcast.
Welcome back to the Racking Focus Podcast. You probably forgot about us because we've been gone for so damn long. I'm Josiah Blizzard.
And I'm John Doyle, and we're here in Josiah's living room watching the home video and international video premiere of Wonder Woman 1984, or WW84.
Or WW84. I'm not sure. There are spoilers ahead, and we're also joined by Steph and Lisa.
And two dogs.
So if you hear squeaky noises and barking and moaning, maybe not moaning, that's kind of weird, but they would be a little annoying because we have not taken them OUT yet. So, was this a good movie or no?
Look, I think that that's an unfair starting question. So let's not start with that question.
All right, well, you start with a question then. Pick a question.
Yeah, so Josiah, did you enjoy Wonder Woman 1984?
Not really. I'm going to be quite honest. Not really. I had a drink, too, and I didn't enjoy it after our mid-pause drink break. So,
well, yeah. I'm going to say this ranks as one of my top three DC superhero films.
What are the other two?
So, disturbingly so.
Can I guess?
Yeah, you can guess.
I'm going to say Wonder Woman, the first one.
Okay.
Is that up there? Am I right?
That is up there.
And Man of Steel.
No, Shazam.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Shazam is spectacular. Yeah, sure. So this one is probably number three. I think that probably is where it fits. Yeah. How about that?
I
like a lot of the DC stories, so I'm not some DC hater here sitting on your big puffy chair.
I'm not a DC hater either, and I actually haven't seen most of the other films. Like, I haven't seen Justice League, I haven't seen Aquaman, I haven't seen Batman v Superman. But what I have seen, I haven't liked. I haven't seen Shazam either. I haven't really liked anything that I've seen from DC. They both just pulled candy out at the same time.
They did. They both grabbed something and they just settled in.
They just got
for a long,
really
boring conversation. That's what our guests are
doing. Well, if you have anything to add, either
certainly
of
feel
the
free to
women
chime
in
here,
feel free.
So look, can I say a couple things real quick?
Sure, go
ahead. I'll start us off, and then you have some questions to ask. Listen, I think that there's a lot going on here that are failed attempts at something that could have been really good.
Yeah.
So, and I want to say first and foremost, I think that this is an effort to channel the vibe of the original Christopher Reeve Superman film. I think this is absolutely, for all practical purposes, a stylistic and tonal remake of that.
Because
movie.
It's the set in the '80s, sort of thing.
Because
or?
all the beats, the character types, the latent empathy for characters who are bad guys, the general tone, the attitude of the heroes, all of that felt so much like the energy or the vibe that's in the first Superman film, the original Superman with Christopher Reeves. And I think that there's an intention to that. Does it manifest itself in an effective way? That's a whole different thing.
Sure.
But I think that that's an idea that's present in this movie.
Yeah. If you do that, then you lose, like, you specifically said, lack of empathy for, like, your antagonist. Like, I need the empathy for the antagonist for it to work, right? Because those movies, I mean, you're talking about an early Superman film and early superhero films in general, just... I don't know if they really got it, right? They didn't really get it until Marvel really took everything to the next level with Sam Raimi's Spider-Man films, really. Because to me, I felt empathy for Harry Osborn, or sorry, Norman Osborn, and I felt empathy for Doc Ock, right, in those first two Spider-Man films. And then obviously all of the Marvelification happened with all of those, you know, the last decade and a half. And you feel empathy for a lot of those characters. And I don't want to do any comparing to Marvel, but if there's a lack of empathy for your villain in any superhero film, then for me, it just falls flat.
Well, and it's because these villains are pressed into the absurd. Mm-hmm. So they're not like as Barbara's not a real person,
right,
by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And neither is Lord. Neither of them are real people. We've seen efforts at some real people in other DC films,
yeah,
by supplementary characters or whatever, but they're not real, and that's part of what they're channeling. So what's his name, Gene Hackman's role as Lex Luthor in that original Superman, is just over the
they're comic book villains,
they're comic villains,
right,
comic book villains, and so they're of the 50s,
yeah,
of comics. And I think that's what we're seeing channeled.
Gotcha.
So that's what's one thing. The other thing I want to say is this. For a film that's woman-driven, men made all the heroic decisions.
Yeah.
And I just got to call it out that,
right.
That she's unwilling because of her emotionalness to give up the guy for the world. The guy's willing to save the world. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens in that last sequence. Now, she is the driver of that, but he gets to do it.
Right.
Disempowers the women across the board in the film, and I found that sort of wacky.
Yeah.
So there you go. There are two big things.
Yeah. I have nothing else to say about that because you hit the nail on the head, and I'm not going to add anything else.
And we should leave it alone and talk about the movie. Now we can go. Now we can like take out the baseball bats and start.
Okay. There. I mean, we asked a lot of questions in our mid drink break because they took a long time to explain how things worked in this world. Steph just. doesn't think some things were answered even at all. So, I mean, some of the questions that we wrote down before, some were answered, but some of the questions we wrote down were, what specifically did she wish for? Because we didn't really hear it, right? She just wished.
She closed her eyes briefly.
She closed her eyes and her hair moved.
She closed her eyes and her hair moved. A gust of wind blew through that lab. And then all of a sudden this man appears a little bit later. But that man was taken over by Chris Pine, I would be totally down for. I'm sure my wife would be down for, too, if I suddenly just turned into Chris Pine. That would be... She's laughing at me now. Anyway. But, my question is, did he take over that man's soul and body? Or did he kick the man's soul out of his body and just take over? Like, he hijacked the body.
And where is that guy during the time Chris Pine's in there?
Where does the soul go? Oh,
ahead,
right?
So usually in movies or anything like where they take over a body, right? You still have like moments of the other person. But it was all Chris Pine.
Oh, sure. Like, you're not 100% that person. Like, that other person is like seeps into the other person's like personality.
Wait, we again need the other dude. Don't even know his name.
No, he's. I'd be interested to see what he's listed as in the credits.
When he comes back.
Oh yeah.
He doesn't recognize her.
Yeah, when he comes back, he doesn't recognize her. Is what Lisa just said. So.
Where was he?
Where did he go?
In purgatory? Was he in the afterlife? Did they exchange places in the afterlife?
Oh, that's a good question. Right? Did he just trade places with Steve's soul? Because we're not talking about the body. We're talking about the actual person inside the.
The guy who was speaking about how much he liked his clothing, and if he did, what? That is a very serious crime.
Yes. Yeah, that's worse than...
Becoming Cheetah.
Yeah, that's worse.
And being mean.
It's,
he didn't look like he changed at all.
Well, it's like you press pause on his life for a second. Yeah. And it's like he didn't even know what happened, I don't think. I don't think he's aware. He might be the only person living on the planet who doesn't know what happened.
I'm going to ask my other question.
Yeah.
So did she rape him then?
That's
when they had sex?
Maybe.
Because...
Super weird because it's weird because then they meet each other later.
Yeah.
And she's had sex with him, but sorry, my phone just fell. And he didn't have sex with her though.
No, but his body did.
His body did. And so there's morally there's some things wrong there. But going back to this death thing. Did Steve actually come back to life, or did his soul just like time travel to 1984? Like, there's a thought I had. It was like he just kind of time traveled instead of actually existing, because he didn't really exist. Like, his soul just moved to a new time.
Right. He said I was someplace for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I was in this new place. Right.
Right. So essentially he just, his soul just moved through time to a new place. I don't know what else to say about that. I just thought I had, but yeah, I don't know. That's a good question of if, did he go to purgatory? Did they just switch places?
Or to nothing.
Or to nothing.
I don't know.
There's just a void.
There's a lot of afterlife issues or I don't know, spirituality issues present in that.
There were some other questions of, we didn't understand how this, what was this thing? I don't even know what they called it. What was this thing? The thing,
crystal.
The crystal thing, the, I don't know what it was called. I don't know what it was called, but
wishing
the thing they wished on, the thing they wished on, this rock, this crystal, this stone thing. I don't know what they called it, but we didn't get an understanding of how this thing worked until after we saw it. And it was like well an hour or more into the movie that we understood that there was a give and take to this whole thing.
Right.
Because I asked a question like after Lord is able to renegotiate or like post negotiate the wish, right? He goes to the oil guy in Egypt and the oil guy makes his wish. And then afterwards, Lord is like, okay, well, I'm going to.
Then I get this.
I get all of this
wish,
and this
right.
and this. And I'm just like, well, so how is he able to just renegotiate after the man makes it? That's not fair to the first guy. He doesn't know the terms of the deal. And you brought up the fact that then there's probably some kind of give and take for the people who wished before the stone imbued Lord's body with power.
Right.
We didn't understand that until an hour or more into the movie.
Right.
So that, I mean, and that's purposeful, obviously, because you don't want to know the consequences before, you know, you need to know them in the movie. But it's still like you leave so many there are so many questions. I was just asking myself, like, what is happening and why is this happening? And I don't even know what the Lord wanted overall.
Ultimate power.
Yeah, but why? Why does he need ultimate power?
Yeah, the why of him, and we got that effort to show his backstory at the end when he has the rope on him. Well, we don't really completely
realize
that.
I'll say effort in these air quotes of they didn't try very hard for me to. They're like, okay, let's show him as a kid.
Get it, and he's from an abusive family and all of that stuff.
I still don't care. I don't care. He could have died in the end.
Yeah.
He's still not a good dad to me. Like, there's. I mean, he might be changing his ways, but I don't care about him. And I sorry, Alistair, I don't really care about you either because there's been no effort for me to care about this this antagonist. Or the antagonist's son. I understand, like, yeah, sure, it'd be nice if this kid at least makes it out alive and okay, but I don't care. I just didn't care about
kid walked a long way.
Yes, and then they randomly found each other underneath the highway overpass. Like, he did. He came out of a bush. He came out of the woods. He was just hiding in the forest. But that, I think, really, that boils it down for me is that I just didn't care at all. Like, I didn't care. So, which I can't say about the first Wonder Woman. I still don't like the first Wonder Woman. But at least I cared as to, like, the goal of the villain, you know? Like the villain in the first Wonder Woman doesn't need to have a reason for me because his reason is just who he is as a god.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it's just, that's just him. That's who he is. And so that's just what I accepted, and the stakes are high, but there was something about that I just didn't care in this movie. I just didn't care at all. I don't know.
So let's talk about filmmaking then for a little bit, and then we'll go back to story. Let's just do that. So what'd you think about so let's talk about cinematography to start. Let's just hit there.
It was nothing special for me, you know. Definitely not the best cinematography I've seen in a superhero movie. It's not the worst I've seen in a superhero movie.
Okay.
But I didn't. There was one shot that I said this held emotional power for me, and it was when, it was towards the end when she walks away from him and he is now covered by that pillar out of sight and she's walking away. And
right.
That was the only shot I think in the entire film that I was like, this is actually a good shot. That actually propelled the story forward, that had emotion, that had power to it, and everything else just didn't really it didn't stick out to me, which is probably good because you don't want your cinematography to stick out But at the same time, you don't just want to just be what it is. Like, it's just there. You
right.
know? I don't know. The shots and the lighting and everything should help drive emotional impact and all that. And I don't know. It's just my review that I wrote on Letterboxd the other day when I rewatched Wonder Woman, the first one, was eye candy and flashy techniques over a dull plot, you know. And there's definitely less flashiness to this movie for me than there was in 1984. Less slow motion, less like flashy techniques, less stuff like
right.
that. But it's still just, it wasn't anything special for me. I just don't care like about the cinematography. What about you? What did you think?
I think the thing that stuck out the most for me from that sort of perspective has to do with special effects,
which
wildly problematic.
Yeah.
Like almost disturbingly so. And so there were times where the lighting of the environment was different than the lighting on our characters. You know, so when she's in the huge flying sequences, she doesn't match the background. Like, I can tell she's green screen.
You can immediately tell when she's on green screen.
And it's
immediately.
And you can tell when we switch to digital figures. And we did that way too early, too. That opening sequence, mm-hmm. she turns into an animated game character so early.
Yeah.
And that really pulls away from my connection. And, you know, Lisa said at the beginning, this looks like Harry Potter, right? It does mm-hmm. look like a giant game of Quidditch when we're watching the beginning of it. And there's so many people watching this event, and there's these few folks. And we get this sort of charming thing, and we get to see Robin Wright, actually, which actually quite nice, right? She's great.
Yeah.
And that the opening had some sensibility to it, I guess. But immediately we see the effects. And we when we can see those effects, and this is one of my huge problems with Aquaman, like it's one of the things I struggle with all these DC films, is the laws of physics aren't operating properly. And so her body doesn't move.
There's no weight.
Right. And so you said you can tell when you can see.
Like, oh, we're on wires.
Yeah, and
can tell
so
we're
many
on wires.
Times. It feels to me sometimes like it's like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, uh-huh. or Hidden...
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
It's such a but that's intentional.
That's genre based.
That movie is doing those things on purpose. And our idea is that the universe doesn't have the same laws of physics for these people.
Mm-hmm.
But for this, we're seeing people fly or be thrown.
Yeah.
And their weight is funky because they've either become digitized or they're on wires. And it just sticks out so much.
Yeah.
And it really does undercut her strength.
Yeah.
As a character, because I think Godot does a really good Godot. Was reading
Godot
in
the
thing, and that was a joke, right? So the guy was reading Waiting for Godot because it's Godot, and that's a joke, and it was clever. That was actually funny. But you know, the Gail Godot, she can be quite powerful on the screen physically, and I think it steals from her when the effects don't give her body the strength and physicality and weight that it deserves.
Well, it steals from everything because it rips you straight out of the movie. And it steals from the performance at the same time, right? You just immediately don't believe anymore. Filmmaking is just an illusion. The whole thing is just an illusion. And if you're ripped out of the film, like, it takes away from every part. Because the second you're ripped out, you start to notice the music. You start to notice the green screen. You start to notice lighting. You start to notice the sound is off, or maybe Steve Trevor is 80 yard the entire time. Chris Pine is 80 yard.
So it feels right.
Like there's things that you just immediately start to notice. And it just completely detracts from the entirety of the film. So, I don't know. They should have spent more time making doing the CG work.
And I wonder why, cause they had all this extra time, right?
Yeah.
This movie's been pushed back. So it feels like you could have really fixed those, like you're talking about Cyberpunk.
Yeah, Cyberpunk 2077.
That is getting new patches after it's been released and fixed.
Right.
And we know that Disney does that all the time, right? Like they're fixing their movies and reposting them, which is awful. But Game of Thrones can, after the fact, you know, have the time to get rid of a coffee cup. Like those things matter. I'm not sure why you don't make the choice unless you've decided that you don't know what's going to happen with this movie because of COVID and theaters, and so you stop investing. Like, I don't know, but it seems to me you could go back and some of those things could be repaired pretty
Well, the majority, if you've shot it on green screen, the majority of the not the majority of the legwork's done, but all you got to do is now, all right, well, let's just make a new background for her. Let's rekey her and just mm-hmm. But I think it comes down to more of the way it was shot. That, like, every time she's running, whether she's a kid or she's an adult, it doesn't look right. Like, it just doesn't.
Right.
There's something with, it just doesn't look right.
When they shoot that side shot, right, like that, what we call like a crab shot. Yeah, like yeah. She's just not.
It just doesn't. There's something about it.
The camera's tracking with her from the side, so like what we call crab shot, and that's so weird that it's just a strange image.
Yeah,
The special effects bothered me straight through, and not less than like they didn't blow me out of the movie as much as they may have you, but certainly I kept saying, you know, that doesn't feel like. That really happened. That doesn't.
Yeah.
And I can buy all the mysticism of she can grab lightning with her magic rope.
Oh, I actually thought that looked great.
Right. I'll buy all that.
Yeah.
But the physics of it feels mm-hmm. funny to me.
Yeah. I don't know how physics works for her. It just doesn't feel right. Which again takes me out of the movie.
But I'll buy,
it might look fine, but
even by her being a little funky. But when she throws a person, they have to have real weight.
Uh-huh.
She can't alter the physics of other people.
Yeah. Well, did you feel the same way about Barbara as well? Like, when she became
when
powerful,
she threw people?
Yeah.
Yeah. When she did her thing. Well, I mean, they do the thing DC films or the Warner Brothers films, whatever, do, where they disorient you so much during the fight sequences that you can't make sense of the laws of physics anymore. So mm-hmm. they put you in the spin, right? So like when they're fighting, the camera is like between the two of them.
Yeah.
And we're seeing their faces and we're rotating around and we lose our orientation in their actual fight.
Right.
But that isn't the case. But when Cheetah's striking that super armor that could hold back the world, which I really thought was going to be used differently because like that felt like a really clever line that got abandoned. That didn't feel real. Like those strikes and all that stuff didn't feel real.
Yeah.
But otherwise they mask it. It's when Cheetah threw the person at the White House or wherever it was. Like it's those moments when other bodies are in play or other things are in play
mm-hmm.
when they don't feel like they fall correctly.
Yeah.
In the same way that like when I watch a styrofoam set break or like watch Godzilla knock a building down right. in an old film,
yeah.
I'm like, that's not a real building. But the movie's not trying to tell me it is in a way where this is really trying to anchor some of this. And that's just, you know, distracting and disorienting and disappointing. Like it could be better. And we see that over and over again in these Warner films, like where the special effects are funky and they love making these characters digital and turning them into game characters, essentially like avatars.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything has just been full on giant CGI fight at the end of most of these, DC films. Right. I mean, that's what I've heard from you.
Without a doubt
in, at the end of the first Wonder Woman, at the end of Man of Steel, at the end of it was the other one. I mean whatever.
Well, I mean,
I'm sure Batman v Superman has it. I'm sure Justice League is just right up there.
Justice League does, and so does Aquaman. Suicide Squad. Aquaman is.
Yeah.
I mean, and Aquaman's problem is the problem she has when she flies
mm-hmm.
is her hair doesn't operate right in the
right.
air, right? So she's flying with force, but her hair is hanging. And I'm like, well, that's weird. And in Aquaman, it's the same problem. When they're underwater, everyone needs a buzz cut. Like if you're going to do an underwater film, you mm-hmm. want to give buzz cuts because we don't know how to make hair work underwater yet. Although
yeah.
we may, because it looks like for the new Avatar films, they may have designed technology to do that. Mm. And we may, because that movie apparently is taking place underwater with some hunk of it. And they figured a way to make that happen. But in Aquaman, they had not. And it's distracting, like those kind of things, those laws of physics violations.
Yeah.
So it's not about their magic. It's about the universe that they're inhabiting being broken in some way.
Yeah.
And if that's not a story point, then you can't have it.
Right. Well, and I don't care that, I don't even necessarily care that these movies end with giant CG brawl fest because it doesn't bother me anytime Marvel does it. It doesn't bother me at all. But most of their action sequences are, you know, very story driven and they matter and the weight makes sense.
Right. And we see faces.
And we see
constantly
faces.
We see their faces.
Yeah, it's about emotion in the fight rather than you know, about the fight itself. It's what the fight means rather than just having the fight exist. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing, I think I said when we finished watching the first Wonder Woman was, it's just about tone and like, they just, it's just, they take themselves way too seriously and they don't need, I'm not saying they necessarily need to be like a Thor Ragnarok laugh at yourself or a Guardians laugh at yourself thing. But I understood the tone of Chris Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. Like the tone was right, you know? Like I get the tone, like, but I just doesn't feel like Zack Snyder's version of the DCEU understands the tone that they're going for. I actually, and you know what? This sounds weird. I actually enjoyed Man of Steel. Most of Man of Steel I really enjoy until there's like a 40-minute fight at the end.
Well, like that's how I feel about First Wonder Woman, right? At the end of fight, First Wonder Woman bugs me.
But there's just like there's things in the first Wonder Woman that I'm just like, you really said that? That just feels like a weird thing to say. Or like there's like a lot of weird dialogue. There's a lot of weird things that happen. There's a lot of visual techniques that they use that I'm just like not on board with because it just feels so over the top cheesy that it's just like I roll my eyes at it. And I got less of that in this movie, thankfully.
Right.
But there is it was just still like I found myself still just yawning a lot during this movie. I was just tired. I was just like kind of bored of watching it after a certain amount of time. I can't really explain why other than the fact that I just didn't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know,
there's nothing compelling me to watch.
Right.
Like there's nothing compelling about these movies.
Pascal does a nice job acting. Like I don't want to harp on the
performances,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cuz I think Pine does a nice job.
Pedro looks like he's having the most fun of anybody on set.
Yeah, and who plays Cheetah? Who plays
Kristen Wiig.
Right on point, doing her work.
Yeah.
Like, it feels full of integrity. So the performances to me feel really fine. Like, comfortable with that. And I don't want to undercut that. I think we're talking about.
This is the filmmaking. This is
right.
This
it's
when
about
you
the larger structure.
These actors, unfortunately, probably have no idea what it's going to look like once it hits the cutting room. You know?
Right.
They have no idea how bad the CG is going to look. They just have to put trust in the filmmaker's abilities. And I just don't think Patty Jenkins is that great of a filmmaker because the only things I've seen from her is Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman or WW84, and I'm just not on board right now with what she's doing.
Yeah, and I mean, she's already signed on for the third one, so she's already been hired to be, or at least
money.
At this point, you know, she's been hired to be the director of the third one.
Well, and if she wasn't, they'd have to go out and find another female director, which I'm sure they could do because there's quite a lot of them.
I gotta say, like, these movies, that, and we've harped about this with the DC films, they just completely suffer from studio engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel where the studio is present and you can feel that the studio is making decisions. And in the same way that like I'm really bothered by the male power, the male dominance of much of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like it makes me crazy. Like those kind of things in a movie that should be going and can go the other way. And the first film makes a much stronger effort at female empowerment. This really undercuts that. The other thing that made me crazy, and again, I think it's a choice, so it's just me not liking it, is the production design made me nuts. Except for her apartment. I loved Prince's apartment.
Yeah. Well, but she still felt like she was, even her wardrobe, she still felt like she was from decades past.
Right.
Right. Her wardrobe was definitely 80s influence, but
super
still
classy too.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
she looked great. She dressed great.
She felt timeless still in the 80s, right?
And I think the costumes actually were really good.
Yeah.
Barbara's costumes crossed the board,
mm-hmm.
on point, like absolutely told story. Like we saw
from
changes,
colorful and bubbly all the way down to dark and
from
gritty,
that awful skirt in the beginning and how that skirt changed to that. Go ahead, Steph.
Well, no, you can keep going because I was going to agree with you. But when she decides to be the cat.
Right. Cheetah.
What was the word she used?
Apex Predator.
Thank you. Apex Predator. She was wearing cheetah print.
No, right. Exactly.
And then she turned into
a cheetah. And you know, but she has the skirt you made the fuss about at the beginning, the horrible skirt.
Oh,
and she takes that skirt off and underneath is our leggings and she pulls her shirt down, which is very 80s thing to do, and she looks sexy. Like the costumes worked on point, like straight across the board. Pascal's costumes were great.
And then, sorry, back to Barbara.
Steph raises her hand to speak.
And then when they're at the party, Diana's wearing all white. And right. Barbara shows up in all black.
Yep.
And then you're like, oh, something bad's going to happen.
No, right. I applaud that. From a production standpoint, I thought it looked very... So it's 80s, right? Like, that's what I want to say. It felt like... it all felt like a stage set. It felt like we were on a... Like there was nothing behind any of it. I felt like I was in very small sound stages with stuff placed in those sound stages. Mm. So like behind in the Christmas scene at the end, right? There is a stand called Donut. They're back behind them, right?
Right.
Like it's just called Donut, and it looks like what a stand, like a hot dog stand. It's like hot dog stand symbology. Like if I had an emoji of hot dog stand, that's would be that. That would be, but it said donut, and if the whole movie felt like that everywhere we went,
yeah,
everything felt very, very. The production time was really weird, save for Diana's apartment.
Right.
And to some extent, although the space was confusing, like the geography was confusing, the Smithsonian space where they were looking at stuff. But yeah, that was something that.
Yeah, the White House definitely felt very much like a not a real building.
Right. Right, exactly. And the same thing for that, whatever the super duper communications touch you through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at the end felt very weird.
Yeah.
And extraordinarily advanced technology for the 1980s. that crazy thing that was there.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say. The production time bothered me. Maybe it was good. Maybe like that's exactly what they wanted, it just didn't work. So maybe the work was good, and that's always the hard question when you don't like it. But that made me a little crazy.
Well, it's about the viewer. Like if we don't believe it, then it's not necessarily done well enough. You know, like the work was probably fine, but the work wasn't good enough to make it.
Or they were told to do something that when they produced it,
sure.
It isn't.
Well, that comes down to studio. That comes down to director. That comes down to all
you know.
Of that.
They say I want it to look like this, and then when you see it, it feels like it's in a set. And I, of all the things, if you're making that choice, that has to be the choice.
Mm.
This movie doesn't reek of the nostalgia of Stranger Things and that sort of reach back to the 80s, the Stephen King, whatever. It doesn't have that sort of that makes me nuts, right? That sentimentality that makes me nuts about that time period. Like I lived during that time period, I was growing up. Like I have a lot less sentimentality about that. I mean, I like a VHS as much as the next guy, but
right.
You know what I mean. And I like punk music as opposed to the pop of that world. But so I don't have this movie did not have that sentimentality.
Yeah.
But it did try and channel the look.
Yeah.
And our expectations are different.
Yeah. Well, I'm really kind of out of things to say about this movie just out of
Don't we have other questions? Don't we have a couple more questions?
Not really, because let me pull the iPad out. Our questions were really not answered. Oh, no. So we asked, is Diana losing her powers or is Diana's powers transferring to Barbara? This was before that was answered for us in the movie. And then we did ask, is Lord extracts a price for those who wish from him, but there is no give and take from the physical stone before it imbued Lord with power. Again, that was answered for us. But again, like we're asking these questions. We asked I think I have 12 questions.
And we were like an hour 10 in.
And we were an hour in and none of it had been answered. So when we're asking a lot of questions an hour in and we're like, what the heck is like, how does this world operate? How does this stone operate? How does like all this, what are the rules of the world? And we're an hour and 15 minutes into the movie. We paused at an hour and 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa
asked what happened to the stone. Well, the stone became him, but then is he still the stone?
He can't still be the stone. He renounced his wish.
He renounces the wish. So where does the stone?
So the stone has to be back someplace.
Yeah. Right? In his office was the last place we saw it.
Assuming. So. Like that's, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, some positives. Let's do that. Let's get a couple positives. I loved some of the clever immediacy of the impact of the stone. So like when people came to be hired immediately, I thought that's nice.
Okay, yeah.
Like there was some nice clever
the second the wish bits. Hits, right?
When the yeah. wish hits, and sometimes when we see that response, it's like that's yeah. not, there were some nice beats there.
Yeah.
I think the Asteria surprise is a great surprise. I think it's wonderful. And the idea that there is a second figure in the world who has Diana Prince's powers is a great thing for a third film to be able to use as mentorship, right? Because one of the things Diana Prince struggles with is she's alone. And we know she's alone because we know in the future, which is the next question I'm going to ask that's problematic. In the future, we know that she is alone, right? Because when she's with Bruce Wayne and Batman v Superman, that's one of the sort of her emotional beats. And but having a mentor was something important to her, and it was something we liked. And like I loved that in the first film.
Right.
That's why seeing Robin Wright was exciting. So it's nice to know that may happen. And I thought that was a great nod to a woman who created this character and built her originally. I thought that was really
great.
Yeah. Although a weird scene fight when she was holding back the world and they were on all sides of her. That was a very strange bit of.
Yeah.
Of material.
Yeah.
Other positives. What other positives? Any positives?
Other positives. I already mentioned Pedro Pascal. Like I had fun watching him.
Yep.
As much as I didn't care about him, I had fun watching him. I don't know if I've ever not enjoyed watching him though in any film, whether it's Mandalorian or if it's Kingsman or Oberyn Martell. Like it doesn't matter. Like he's just fun to watch for me. So I enjoyed watching him, but you know, I actually find the Mesquera. How do you say it? The Mesquera. How do you say the name of the island? Is that it? The Mesquera. I don't know how to say.
The Mesquera.
Mesquera. It's like a SC sound.
The Mesquera.
No, it's like it's one word, I believe.
Yes, it's one word.
I actually find all of that really interesting. Like, I would like to spend way more time on an island than I would in the real world.
Well, and that's the big, that's the choice they made in the first film.
Yeah.
That's a price that gets paid, right?
Yeah.
Because by destroying that world so fully, which was important, but by doing that kind of separation, we lose, and especially killing off people we cared about, we lose the ability to go back and get a lot of that history. And I think they sort of tried that at the beginning of this.
Yeah, I mean, we went back, we started there, and I thought that whole sequence with the kid on the with Diana on the horse and competing in these, you know, Olympic games of sorts.
Well, what did I say? I said I called it Amazon Ninja Warrior.
Amazon Ninja Warrior. Yeah, like that. That was, I mean, that was fun to watch, as much as I didn't like the way that gravity and physics worked.
Right.
It was still fun to watch. Like that was a better opening sequence than diving back into the negatives. The mall sequence. I thought the action almost across the board in this movie was boring to me.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's grabbing the 80s. That mall scene felt so much to me like a 1980s superhero film battle. Some people who are loving this, because there are people who really are enjoying this.
Sure, yeah.
I really feel like there's a nostalgia for a kind of film that isn't full of the pseudo realistic acting, like the heightened realism of what Marvel does, right? When Marvel's doing it right, like so
that's a choice you need to make across your universe.
That's right. That's right? Exactly right. The first Wonder Woman is Captain America, right? Like it's the Captain America knockoff, right? Uh-huh. This is the Superman knockoff. Like it's channeling another genre. If that was a big choice in the way, you know, we're seeing some genre things happening right now in Marvel, if that was a choice, that would be great. If it was like upfront, like balls out, just let us know that's what was happening.
Yeah.
Then that's a whole different story, because style is style and we can buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're saying it's a regular superhero movie and then what you're doing is channeling style, that becomes less impactful to me.
Yeah.
My other question that we didn't answer, I don't think we said this either, right? Is I cannot remember if she flies in Justice League.
I haven't seen
Batman v Superman.
I tried looking it up and I didn't.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch both those films. I can't remember, but boy, she flies and flies in this movie.
Well,
and
she flies, but it made me think. I'm like, is she flying or is she like from Toy Story, like falling with style, right? Like that's what I thought of was.
She sure looks just, like she's flying.
Just flying.
She's
but,
catching the wind and stuff, and like she did this thing with her arm. She did this little like ronk in when she brought her arm to move herself.
Right.
And that image of her punching forward, is like is absolutely a Wonder Woman image.
Yeah.
But my question is. Flying would be super, super powerful in those other films.
Right.
And I just can't remember if she does it. And someone out there should let us know if you're listening and you know if she does, and I'll go back and watch it. But that to me was one of those things. She flew for so, it was so, and it's such an important character beat for her to do that because it's how she brings Steve into who she is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. It's not that I didn't think of that. It didn't connect for me that happened because the editing was poor, in my opinion, as well. There's just things I don't like any of these. Like, I have not seen a DC movie that I can say 100% that I've really, really liked. I just can't. I've seen everything except for Aquaman, Batman v Superman, and Justice League, and Shazam. Those are the three. But I've seen
four.
Those are the four.
No, sound like Monty Python. Four films seen.
Those are the four. I've seen, I think, the other four or five that exist. I don't know how many I've seen. But, I mean, the last one we watched was Birds of Prey.
Right.
God, I hated that movie.
Yeah, I liked that better in the second viewing.
Yeah, okay.
Has huge problems. And I have to be honest, I'm so super set. Hang on.
Yeah, I just don't. There's just something. The DC is just
She flies in the Justice League animated series.
Okay, so she's flying. Okay, so it's animated.
Hermes granted
Wonder
her
Wonder
flight.
Say it again. What?
It looks like she doesn't fly in the other films.
Okay, but she flies in the animated,
which don't have any connection to this in any real way.
No.
Go ahead. You were making a point.
No, I don't know. DC just isn't doing it for me. Like, there's just something about these movies, and maybe it's Zack Snyder's vision overall. What he's brought into the
I've watched universe. All these movies and some of these characters I love a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I love the things about them are often the thing that's missing. Mm-hmm. And it always feels like a gimmick to me, like things feel so gimmicky. Mm-hmm. in these films, and so I want to love the Wonder Woman films, and I'm going to enjoy it to some extent because it is a manifestation of a comic that I like.
Yeah,
seeing her in that gold costume is exciting, right?
Yeah,
that's all great. But on the other end of the spectrum, like as I sort of breathe it out, it's also disappointing because it doesn't ever reach.
Yeah,
and DC's had that problem across the board, and I just think part of it is ownership of the media. Like the IP is owned by a company that can't keep its nose out of the business.
Yeah.
At some stage, whether it's at the end, like we think happened with Suicide Squad and Justice League, where like this stuff gets mangled at the end. And when we see the Snyder Cut, we're going to know if it's consistent across the board. But I go back straight through what makes DC Comics great is often missing in these films because a corporation digs their fingers in and removes the individual artist's
integrity. Well, I guess really what I should say is the last movie I saw that was DC, and correct me if it's not DC, was Joker.
Yeah, Joker's DC, but Joker's not part of this universe.
Right. Well, and Joker was given, Todd Phillips given control.
That's exactly right.
They gave him, they were like, Todd, we don't, I think I remember reading that they thought this film was going to be no good, so they just let Todd do whatever he wanted.
And they called it Joker, not the Joker,
right.
And they pulled it out of the universe.
Right.
And it was done the way, with the same darkness. Like, the thing about it is, that movie is dark, dark,
that's
dark.
That's darker than some of the Nolan films
but
that were
anchored.
In the DC
it's so well anchored. And we don't see that in the rest of the DCEU movies.
Well, it's because
right?
it's about character and not plot. And so, and that's, again, I hate, I don't want to be that guy who compares all of this stuff to Marvel, but Marvel's about character, not plot. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, about character, not plot. Chris Nolan's Batman, about character, not plot. Character always comes before plot in those films.
And that's why the third of the Dark Knight films is problematic, right?
Exactly.
Because character
gets
shoved out the window in favor of plot.
Yeah.
And that's hugely problematic. Those are my big comments. Having read the source material for some of these, like having read those comics, I'm I I understand choices that are being made, but when they don't manifest themselves in a way that is engaging or is or meets the capacity of the talent they have on the screen, mm-hmm. then I get mad.
Yeah.
So
keep going. Yeah.
Godot and Pine and Pascal and
Kristen Wiig.
But let's go to the other films. Like, those guys are, there's good actors. There's these people delivering really strong performances. Mm-hmm. And then we surround them with work that doesn't land, that doesn't have the strength and capacity to tell the story in a way that is fully connecting to the audience. And so I can like this because it's Wonder Woman and I'm excited that she's there. But then I get mad because of the things that it doesn't do. Mm-hmm. And when filmmaking is... when you have this much money and you can't land the filmmaking, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, you can't land the story.
Yeah, it's true.
When we know people with no money, like, who make something like The Farewell, right? Or a Baccarat, the film that I've told you about.
Sure.
Or, you know, whatever. The
Heck, even compared to Todd Phillips' Joker. Is,
right,
you know,
right,
same
right. Financially,
you're talking financially,
right. But you haven't, and but that one meets the actors, that meets the actors' performance. That movie meets their performance, and I think these guys' performance are better than the film that surrounds them.
But without question, yeah.
Right, there we go.
We're about 45 minutes in,
yeah,
so there's no more crapping I can do on this movie that I haven't done already. So, you know, normally our rating system is: should you skip it? Should you see it at home? Or, you know, should you see it in theaters? And since we're not actually able to, well, I mean, I guess we could have gone and seen this in theaters. I guess maybe not. I'm not really sure what the rules are right now. We could
you
have,
could.
Right?
Yep.
And depending on where you are, you can, unless you're in a lockdown situation somewhere in the United States or across the world. But so that still applies as of right now, mm-hmm. until theaters decide they want to shut down entirely. Fingers crossed it doesn't happen.
Right.
But for me, I'm going to say, just watch this at home and get HBO Max and just give it a watch, because I wouldn't have cared if I saw this in theaters or saw it at home. I still would have said that movie's not that good.
Yeah, I think it's a home viewing, because I think that the effects are not strong enough for me to want to spend the money in the theater.
Uh-huh.
And I actually didn't like a lot of the early music, the first half of music, which I think was channeling Superman. I would say watch it at home and watch it on HBO Max, because they have tons of other great material.
Yeah.
You can, I mean, if you want to watch another DC thing, go watch the Doom Patrol series.
Yeah.
Like, goodness gracious. Right, Lise?
My wife, thumbs up.
I mean, Doom Patrol's fantastic. It's, it is more cartoony than this in its production value, right? Like, it doesn't have the slick money behind it, but from a story perspective, it's just great. And so like, get HBO Max, watch this, fine, watch all of them, but then watch the animated Batmans, watch Doom Patrol.
That's the other stuff, is the animated series of Batman knows tone, like, right, like it's spot on there. Even
great
all
acting.
all of the animated stuff, like the Killing Joke, Under the Red Hood, like all of that stuff is great.
Right.
DC, like, animated films, and
so my
knows what they're
doing. And we have that on HBO Max, plus a load of other great films. So just get HBO Max.
We are not
spend
sponsored
the money on
by
that.
HBO Max. We have like three people who listen to this podcast, and if you're those three people, I love you.
Right.
But HBO Max, if you want to fork over some money,
and then we could get more advertising.
Then we might be able to get more advertising.
Watch. All right, cool. Let's wrap up. So there's our thing. Watch it at home.
Watch it at home.
And feel free to watch it. Like, this is not this is not for me Aquaman, what I would say. Avoid it with every bit of your body.
Don't do it
to yourself. Watch this. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for listening to this, probably the last episode of 2020.
I would think it's the last episode.
It's definitely the last
episode
of 2020.
Unless we try and fit Soul in.
Oh, yeah.
But
I would put money that that's a better movie than this.
I think we can put money.
Yeah.
We're not going to put money.
We're not going to put money on
we're
that.
We're both going to bet on the same side.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for listening. And I don't remember how we close out any of these because it's been months since.
So you can go to rackandfocuspodcast.com and you can find out all our social media channels. We're on Instagram and we're going to be posting again some more stuff. So that's there. And you can also follow us both on Letterboxd. Josiah writes more reviews than I, and I rate more films there. You can find out sort of what we think and get a suggestion and lists from us there. You can also contact us at rackandfocuspod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Am I right? Yeah,
that's
and,
correct.
And so there's plenty of places for you to make connections with us, and we would love to hear from you. We're on Anchor FM as our core source, but you can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever you get your
Spotify,
podcast.
Spotify, anywhere.
Yeah, and so go grab us from any of those locations, but leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. So for goodness sake, we want more than three people listening. And we're going to try and watch movies now at home, since this looks like the path by which we're going to be doing
it. What we got to do. So last two things. Please share this with a friend if you have a friend who likes listening to movie reviews.
Or if someone who really likes Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. And they're feel free to have them. They can DM me and crap all over me. It's fine if they hate me for saying what I've said. The second thing is if you have a movie you want us to review, doesn't matter if it came out 50 years ago or it came out, you know, this past month. Like, we would like to know what you guys want us to watch and talk about. So that's it.
That's it. All right. Yeah. So thanks for listening.
Yeah. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to the Racking Focus Podcast.